Another active morning, a very active morning, actually, and got some works in. 10 days out, 9 days for Oaks workers, and plenty to discuss and plenty of other activities to keep us busy the next 3 hours, and maybe a little less spirited and frenetic than yesterday. Oh, my God. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. The morning session, and I got a couple of the videos out. There's actually more in my phone, and ran out of real estate to post everything. But I think I got the major, the most important moments from the training session at 7:30, and that included the two Japanese horses working together, and frankly, Continuar. I think has already proven that he is he's no Derma Sotogaki. Let's put it that way. That he cannot keep up with Derma Sotogaki, and he got drilled. It was not a pleasant experience for Continuar. And Derma Sotogaki looked fine, I guess. He was okay. It's one of those works where, you know, the one horse is struggling, and you know, the other one looks better by you know, just by virtue of what went on out there. And you know, Continuar on the backstretch, when they were slowly getting into it, had a pretty sizable edge that Derma Sotogaki made up on him in a couple of strides midway on the turn. Just, you know, basically at will, pulled even with him, and then just, you know, dashed away, essentially. I don't know if Mike Welsh is going to see it this way. Sun Thunder work, too, and I will get that. I didn't get that video up, the Sun Thunder work with Brian Hernandez Jr., but Sun Thunder seems to be getting a little bit of attention. And because he's working aggressively, and the peak horses, as we discussed yesterday, have a tendency to work aggressively. The filly did too, actually. The Ashland work, she didn't work; she just was galloping. But she was the exercise girl had all she could handle. Sun Thunder looked very good, and essentially, Brian Hernandez Jr. was up in the irons. You'll see in the videos. I mean, he's not even, you know, down riding, and 48-3 for the half, but he went further, actually. So Sun Thunder, okay. But to me, the work of the morning, a horse that's waiting in the wings. I put up the video of Taxed, Randy Morse, and they're sitting number 15. Wonder Wheel, who's going to work tomorrow. You know, the weather looking a little iffy over the next 36 hours, so or into tonight and tomorrow. So I think some people, if rain is moving in, you know, later in the day, Thursday, I think they're gonna, you'll have some people move works up, but including Wonder Wheel. I just got here and I missed around 6 something that apparently Wonder Wheel was, I don't want to say was running off with Kim Carroll, but was apparently very eager. So they put the watches on her. In other words, that's how fast she was moving. And so Wonder Wheel, who just got in, of course, with Chad Brown and Peter Brandt bypassing Oaks, the next horse in would be Taxed. Taxed, the collected filly that Randy Morse and owner Richard Badke claimed for $50,000 here the day that she broke her maiden at Churchill, and then went on to some mixed performances at Oaklawn for Morse, but the A performance, when it counted, was her effort in the in the fantasy, where she was a good second. I mean, she was beaten two lengths and change by Wet Paint. But no disgrace in that. And she looked terrific. Rafi Bejarano aboard. And if she gets in to the Oaks, she's going to work her way on some tickets. She looked terrific, I thought. She went in 47-3 and galloped out. She thought, that nice filly. What a nice score for Morrison and his owner, nabbing this one and being on the precipice. I exchanged some texts earlier with Randy Morris. I didn't ask him if they don't get in, if she'll contest the one turn for the three-year-old fillies. But that is typical. So to me, that was one of the highlights of the session this morning. And all the gallopers were out, and I got some clips of most of them, and I'll put them all up collectively. I was so busy with the phone. A lot of times I typically will make notes, and once the session starts. But with my fabulous new is it a 13 or a 14 or whatever, my new the latest the iPhone I've got, it's very cool. If you, and I guess this was true earlier, I don't know why I found out now, but or with this phone, but if you hold your finger down on the photo, you get a little video clip. So that's what I've been doing. And that when there's little, 4, 5, 6, 7 second flourishes of video, that's what it is. So instead of jotting down my thoughts and notes, I've been, the last couple of days, I've been taking those little videos and then going back, and I even comment to myself as I, as I'm seeing it. So I'll get some more of those out later after the show. All right. There's a crazy story that we have to get to. In fact, KK will pop over at some point. You probably saw him if you were watching the 7 to 8 a.m. Work show with Joe Christofek and Caitlin Free and Scott Shapiro. You saw KK. Must have been about 7. He had some tidbits, but the story that has emerged explaining the Javier Castellano move from Rays Kane to Mage. There's a very funny sort of marketing angle to what happened there, and it has to do with the restaurant Raising Cane's, the chicken tender company, the restaurant chain. Castellano is one of the jocks who is involved with the Jeff Ruby restaurants and wears the Jeff Ruby Steakhouse logo on his pants. Well, Rays Kane has made or is in the process of making a representation of a sponsorship deal with the restaurant. So Raising Kane, Rays Kane, and so because Castellano is tied to the Jeff Ruby sponsorship, he can't wear Raising Kane's logo on his pants. So whatever jock, and there's apparently Corrales or Machado, those seems to be the two that Ben Colebrook is dealing with, the decision and who's going to ride. They will have Raising Cane's on their pants. And so, listen, it's always good when you mainstream anything like that brings attention. Is a positive, but it isn't something you would have thought would interfere with a jock's call. But in this case, because of the extensive sponsorships that Jeff Ruby has in the game, and of course in the region, it that boiled over into this particular jock's call. So that is the backstory to what happened over the last few days. It's a little offbeat. There's been plenty of reasons that the jocks have come off horses. This is the first, I think, that a sponsorship issue has entered the fray. The action yesterday at OBS, as things got started, and very solid. I did not look at comparisons, so I have not. I don't have all the numbers, and of course they'll go right through Friday, so we got plenty of time to look at the sale. But the leader in the clubhouse after day one of bidding late in the session, hip 253, a big rangy Arrogate colt that went in 10 flat for Hartley Dorenzo. Donato Lanny picking up for Amer Zidane, and $1,450,000. So the first seven-figure seller at OBS. There were a couple of $800,000 purchases. There was a Bolt Oro filly that Leal, the Jacksons, nabbed from Nick Demerick, and Jackie, too. Steve Venosa sold a Twirling Candy Colt, the one that went 9-4 to Oliver Street Lawrence Bloodstock. $800,000. The Greens and Gary Barber, a group of people that proud to be friends with, and $675,000. The Hartley Dorenzo consigned Uncle Mo Philly out of customer base, $675,000, and Cherie for the Belladonna Group from the Demerics, a Constitution Colt out of Allée Marie, $500,000. Those were the top five knockdowns yesterday. Nice eclectic, very nice eclectic set of buyers, and seems like everybody did well. Speaking of visits and some horses you might have been familiar with just from the last 10 days of conversation, Joe Applebaum's off the hook with two of the top 10 sellers on the day, or maybe top 11 or 12. They sold the Mendelssohn filly that really blistered, that went 9-3 early in the breeze, the Florida bred, to CSLR Racing, $385,000, and they sold one to Maverick and Sienna, Maverick, the Windstar Racing operation, $375,000. That was the Omaha Beach Filly, so a very good day, an Ontario bred. So look for her next year in the Woodbine Oaks if everything goes properly and goes well. So congratulations to Joe. But everybody, it seemed like... from what we can see, everybody did well. We had that conversation Monday as well with Mark Board and Brandon Rice, and the Bolt Doro filly, she RNA'd, the one that went early in the sale. She RNA'd at first pass, but then she ended up being sold privately, negotiated the Reeves, Dean and Patty. Reeves Thoroughbred Racing, $300,000 for that Bolt Doro filly that we talked about the other morning. So congratulations to Brandon and Mark and company. How about here's Mike Ryan buying one for Peter Redekop, $310,000, an Into Mischief colt out of the very nice Carolina, who, of course, you remember for Eclipse. And what else catches my eye? How about Seth Klarman with a couple of purchases yesterday? And you can always count on Seth Klarman to buy something a little unusual. He did buy a Good Samaritan colt for $340,000, and I don't have it on my first page of notes, but I did see that he bought a Louisiana bred for $200,000. that made me kind of smile. Day one in the books. We might get a conversation in at some point soon with Jessica Martini, and we also expect to have Tim Keefe. And in fact, I think we're going to get Tim Keefe right away, so that we can get the Maryland story updated immediately. Jessica Martini, I think we might get to after Dick Powell. Dick will join us in a little bit, and after we wrap up with Tim. All right. We've got more Pace conversation, some follow-up to yesterday's two visits. In fact, if you were listening to the replay just now, you heard the two conversations with Tyler Wissman, and he continued the conversation, actually, on a Twitter thread. So we'll get more of that in as the morning proceeds. Let me get Tim Keefe to join us. And there was plenty of activity yesterday when it came to the what I've been calling the crisis. Tim, I think that's a fair word.
We were at a point, yeah, where we were, crisis. Yeah, yes, I think that's an accurate statement.
Well, let's. it does seem, at least as of yesterday, because it as I said to Alan Foreman on Monday, it seemed like there were two completely different versions of the way things were unfolding. But luckily, before the 11 o'clock meeting with the Maryland Racing Commission, it seems like you and the MJC, and it seemed like everybody kind of came to an agreement.
That's exactly right. It seemed like a bit of a, well, what didn't seem, it was a lot of a, like a roller coaster ride. I was under the impression we had reached an agreement, only to find out that wasn't the case. And then in the 11th hour, everybody came together the morning of the commission meeting. Several of us did, and were able to work out what we needed to work out to make everybody happy. You know, there were concessions on both sides, and at the end of the day, I mean, we're all working towards the same goal, trying to make it as safe as possible for everyone involved in the sport, especially the jockeys, exercise riders, and of course our horses. And we felt, the horsemen felt, that the move we needed to make was to get another opinion. Dennis Moore, super guy, you know, great, well-respected, been in the business a long time, does a phenomenal job out at Santa Anita. But, you know, the horsemen here don't know him. And, you know, we just didn't have the confidence in him to really get things back to where we needed it to be. And, you know, the one person that checked all those boxes and all of our minds collectively was John Passero. He's here. He's willing to do it. You know, we just had to get through allowing the, Maryland Jockey Club to okay that. And they did. They finally did.
Well, and of course, I'm glad you framed it that way, because I mentioned in conversation, yes, I think it was yesterday, that this was never, this was no, it's no reflection on Dennis, who everybody
none
respects.
Whatsoever. Yeah, absolutely none whatsoever. He was put in a difficult position. He's not versed with this track out here.
No.
He doesn't know, you know, anything or very little about Laurel, other than, you know, the 48 hours he was here to visually inspect it, and a bunch of computer sheets telling him what's in the composition of the soil. I just don't see how that's a real fair analysis on you know, for him to come out and certify everything as A-okay. And then, of course, you know, that afternoon we had, you know, we had our, that Thursday afternoon, we had, you know, we had all the trouble we had. So, you know, no, it's absolutely no reflection at all on him. He's, you know, read his resume. He's great. He's well respected. He does a great job. So, anyway.
Well, and Passero, of course, has years, you know, there's a lot of this is atmospheric and knowing, you know, knowing the conditions, the ambient conditions in Maryland, and with there's no issues at Pimlico, the issues at Laurel. Let's talk about that portion of this, Tim, and why do you sense that there's an insistence by the MJC to stay at Laurel and race for you know, the coming week or two, when you can just simply move over to Pimlico and run these races?
I can't answer that question for the Maryland Jockey Club. That's a question for Craig Frabel or Mike Rogers or you know, one of the guys in their department. I think, and they've said all along, in their view, there's nothing wrong with the racetrack. In their view, Laurel Park is safe. And I think an admission of closing Laurel and moving to Pimlico early would be an admission by them that there is something wrong with Laurel. I can only surmise that. I'm not saying they've said that in the past, and I think that's probably their position. Their position is the track here at Laurel Park is safe.
So you're going to have to essentially, and owners and all the horsemen are going to have to wait until Frank's got a handle on this?
Yeah, so let me tell you where we are this morning. John's been here. John's actually, he's here full-time today. He'd taken some samples in prior days. He knows what's going on out here. He's made some quick assessments. He's made some changes already. Mike Rogers and I have spoken with him this morning. He's watching horses train. He's talking to the horsemen, and it's his assessment that, and I'm going to have a conference call with John Passero and Chairman Algio at 10:15. John's analysis is that the track is, in his opinion, safe to run right now with the time that he has between now and Saturday, and with what he's already accomplished here on the track. And it's going to be his recommendation that we take entries for Saturday. And if everything continues well, training in the morning, et cetera, and he's still happy with everything, the intention is to run on Saturday.
All right. Then it's a wait and watch scenario.
Yes.
Are you dealing?
Again, where we are right now, full training opens tomorrow. We've been jogging, galloping. We're going to start breezing tomorrow. And John will still continue with some of the changes, et cetera, that he's going to be making and evaluating. And if he's not happy on Saturday, we'll pull the plug Saturday. But every intention looks like we're going to be running on Saturday, assuming everything goes well in the morning with training, et cetera.
All right. We'll hope that comes off. As part of the negotiations, one of the missives that the MJC offered, included references to the California protocols that are in place at Santa Anita. What's the status of that element of discussions?
Those weren't part of this negotiation, but in speaking with Craig Fravor the other day, I told him we are absolutely positively in Maryland not opposed to looking at new protocols to make our racing safer, make it safer for our horses and everybody included. We're not opposed to that. But I questioned him, why are they only doing them in California? If this is something that Belinda feels strongly about, and I'm not debating whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, but if this is something that everybody in first racing is concerned about, why aren't they at all the tracks instead of just at Santa Anita? Put them at Gulfstream, put them everywhere. So, that'll go a long way rather than trying to throw these protocols at the horsemen here in Maryland when, we're having instances where horses are getting injured, making it appear as though it's horsemen sending out horses that shouldn't be out here. I'm not making, judgments on either part. I'm just merely stating, if you're going to have these protocols, put them everywhere. Put them at all your tracks. I also have some question as to the legality of them. If we're regulated, ruled and regulated under HISA, HISA is the standard with the safety protocols. HISA is not the minimum standard. HISA is the standard. So I'm not really certain legally you can enforce those, to be perfectly honest. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not suggesting either way, but I think there's some question as to whether or not those rules can really even apply now that HISA has authority over them. So I think that's something that has to be looked at. But look, we're not opposed to any of that. First Racing has hired two veterinarians that are here in the morning, Jenny and Heidi. They're fantastic. They're great. they monitor horses. They check if, you know, if they've got a horse that they see training in the morning, if they have some questions about. We've given the MTHA and the Maryland Racing Commission, they've given them authority to put those horses on the vets list if they deem it necessary. I mean, we're open to any protocols, but we need to figure out how they're going to work, how they're going to affect the horses and the horsemen, that sort of thing, and how they're going to be instituted before we just take a knee-jerk reaction and agree to them because we've had some injuries and fatalities.
Well, and, given what is now a semi-regular issue with the track, I mean, this has been going on for seemingly three plus years.
It's certainly not to the extent we've experienced in the last 3 weeks, which actually brought everything to a head, but it's been back and forth. Yes, it's been a little while getting everything to everybody's comfortable. And it's been a little difficult.
Tim Keefe with us from the Maryland THA, and for those that haven't followed, some of the commentary and the back and forths, Tim has, the complete support and respect of the training community, the ownership community. I saw some, you got to be gratified, Tim, with some of the things that your fellow horsemen have said in support of how much, we used to talk about this with Rick Violette. I mean, the time that goes into this, the time away from your horses and your business, I mean, nobody gets paid for these positions, and it's taxing.
It can be a time, but I learned a long time ago when I worked for somebody, I said, the most important thing you can do for your community and for your industry is volunteer. Volunteer your time if you want to try to make a change. So I do think it's important to volunteer your time. I wasn't sure I signed up for all of it this time, but it's funny, he made reference to Rick Violette. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I picked up the phone, and he says, "Hey, good morning, Rick." I said, "Rick." He says, "Yeah, Rick Violette." So that's the second time I've heard his name in the last hour. So anyway, listen, I mean, there are a lot of people here doing this. It's, it's not me. I'm a little bit of the face of it, obviously, right now. But there are a lot of people behind the scenes that are helping, trying to get to where we got the other day. And again, as I already said earlier, we're all, MJC, First Racing, the horsemen back here, we're all looking to try to do the same thing, make everything as possibly as safe as we can for everybody involved. That's our goal. We don't want to not run. We don't want to sit in front of the commission and have an emergency meeting with everybody there, temperatures raised. None of us want that, obviously. We just want a safe racetrack to which we can train and race on to make a living. That's it.
Exactly. And for us to bet on. Tim, I'm glad we got a chance. I know you're picking back up here at 9:30. So thank you. And anything else we need to communicate, let me know.
I will. Thanks for the time, Steve.
Not at all. Tim Keefe, everybody, who has been stalwart in dealing with this. So there's your latest update, and it sounds like everybody's on the same page, and now it's just a question of getting a green light. The portion of not taking advantage of Pimlico when racing is going to move there in 2 weeks anyway, that part of it is a little. That's something we can ask when we get to Baltimore, I guess. But, they want to move forward on the track and, that they're scheduled. I don't know. It would seem to me that, you've got every opportunity to take your time and do whatever is going to be done to the to the main track. If you have to pick up the composition and the cushion and rework it and lay it back down, examine the base. But a lot of what's crazy about this is that it's been done a number of times over the last few years. I mean, there was the one thing that happened where the, what was it, a water main break, right, in mid-stretch that affected the track, and they had to deal with that. And then, you know, there's been the other spots that have a tendency, as Alan Foreman told you, I think, last week, you know, the wetland issue and the water table in and around Laurel has been, you know, has contributed to issues in the past. And for those that don't recall or have never heard explanations of how you get soft spots and trouble areas on a racetrack, the base, the firm base that is underneath the composition, underneath the what's known as the cushion, when you get and nobody ever explained this better than John Nayrud years ago on the show, fissures, much like they can occur on horses in their bones, a fissure in the base then creates soft spots in the cushion. The silt and things settle and you know work their way in the fissure, in the crack in the cushion. And as Nayrud explained years ago, every 7 or 8 years that you needed to pull up the composition, everything you know above the base, and examine and you know basically redo the base or repair you know the base and just make sure that it's tight and secure. But that's the you know the series of events that transpire, and you know there's the way in which obviously the way in which water drains, and I mean it's just incredibly involved, and like everything in this game, let me reach for Dick Powell too. Like everything in this game, it is complicated. This is at every level, and so when people rail against you know, oh, racing. Yeah, racing. there is so many working parts to every single aspect of this game and sport and industry, because it's all, you know, I always think of the North Dallas 40, the great line from Nick Nolte, when you say it's a game, when I call it a business, you call it a game, and when I call it a game, you call it a business. It's all of those things. The complexities and the intricacies of so much of this is so difficult, and that's why, I mean, when there's acrimony, it really does nobody any good, because you're not, if you're an observer, you're not understanding, you know, how difficult all of the putting all the pieces are, you know, together are, and you know, over the years I can think of so many different occasions where things happen that nobody could have anticipated. And you know, I guess some people can say, "Oh, well, you should have anticipated." Okay, that's thank you. Thanks for your input. You should have anticipated it. I mean, like the injury to David Cohen in the aqueduct, you know, in the sunken paddock at Aqueduct, and the fact that the ambulance that was there for the humans couldn't get to him because it happened. He got kicked in the lower paddock. I mean, there's things that you just don't, until they happen, when it comes to protocols and having everything in place, the underpinnings, it's very, very difficult. And I you know, there's, the good news on this, I think, is that the acrimony flared up for, you know, whatever, 24, 48 hours, however long, and then everybody started to pull in the same direction. And that's the positive. All right, let's pull in the direction of Dick Powell, because there's a big action at Chatin this weekend, and an action at Happy at the Valley, plus it's just time to talk to Dick Powell. I mean, what we on top of everything else, Jessica Martini is going to join us from OBS. We'll get her day one recap and an anticipation of the second day of horse sale, and much, much more. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning.
I think
you're going to promise me nice weather next week when I get down there.
I it looks pretty promising. 70s it doesn't look. I don't see a ton of high percentage of rain, but you know, this is a volatile. You know, you're in a valley, and I never worry about Derby Oaks weather until like Wednesday afternoon. That's about the only time you start to take any forecast seriously around here.
Except for years, my deadline was Monday, so I had to worry about weather on Monday.
Yeah, that's true.
I had to file my stuff on Monday, but this year I don't have to do that. So.
Well, we will. That I like that. That means we'll have 11th hour, last minute decision making from you, and so we'll look forward to it. And I suppose, since we went in this direction, do you have anything that's catching your attention, and as you watch the news coming out of Derby Oaks preparations?
Just trying to follow along. One issue with the Dubai races is the UAE Derby is run earlier in the day, and usually the sun is out. And that makes for a very different racetrack than when the Dubai World Cup is run at the end of the day and the sun has been down for hours. So when the sun is up, the track is loose. And under those conditions, you can't put enough water down. Put the water down, it's evaporated almost immediately. So that track tends to be cuppy and brittle and rather slow. So for Derma Sotagake to run as fast as he did under those conditions, to me, is even more impressive. Now, that might also be a function of the horses in the World Cup just weren't really that good this year. I don't know. But his effort, the 155 and change from mile and 3/16, is super, super strong. I mean, that is as good as basically any three-year-old performance of the year.
And this continues. There's a few parts of that that continue to be debated and discussed. One thing that came up yesterday when we did the thorough pace conversation in two parts with Tyler Wissman, and then I put up his grid, his five quadrant pace separations, and I got a very interesting response from a West Coast player and stakeholder who's very sharp, and he was basically saying that a lot could end up being very speculative in terms of who goes forward aggressively, and then of course we will wait till Monday to the draw and see whose hand gets forced. But subsequently, Dick, I pulled up Jerry Brown's got the Thoroughgraph the early numbers and his pace projection for the opening quarter, and then even Time Form as well. Time Form with their pace projector, and already without even a determination of Continuar and Dermasotagaki's speed, essentially, they are already projecting a fast pace for the Derby. And yet, you know, most of the pace projections, they're speculating where Dermis Odigaki is going to be forward and continue are, certainly based on today. It just looks like he's, you know, slow into stride and kind of plods along. I think that this continues to be the most uncertain element of Derby. Then you fold in Crown Pride and the way he, you know, went headlong into the pace last year. I think it's a very difficult equation.
Yes, it definitely is. This Dermis Odigaki just seems to have something that these other international horses that have come in did not have. And like I say, that UAE Derby was really, really strong. Whether he did it from the front end or got loose on the lead or set his own pace, which he did, you know, all that stuff. It was just that was a super effort. He's had plenty of time since then. He's being managed by the right people, and no stone left unturned, and he'll be a force to contend with.
And I'm just reaching for since I mentioned Thurrup, and tomorrow, even though we'll be doing, you know, our regular Thursday visit with Jeff Franklin, I'm sure we're going to talk about the Derby at Oaks sheets and the numbers going in. Thurgraf gave Dermis Odigaki a 1.5 for the UAE Derby, which makes him essentially the fastest horse coming in.
Yeah, I buy it.
Yeah, and I mean nobody there. There's some horses that have run twos and change. Tappet Trice has got the one out of the Bluegrass, which makes him a half point faster than Dermis Odigaki, and Verifying got a 1.5 in the Bluegrass. So basically, those are your three fastest: Tappet Trice, Dermis Odigaki, and Verifying. And then there's a handful of horses that have run twos and change. So it is. Ones and twos at this point in 3-year-old years are, you know, they're okay. This is not a fast group, period. Nick Tamaro said that the other day, last week. It's just not a fast group. And the fillies are just downright slow. It's very strange that, you know, that sort of out of nowhere, you know, I made the speculative suggestion last week with Sid that, I mean, my theory is that, you know, with more and more classic distance stallions, you know, being the most sought after in the featured stallions, you're just getting, you know, you're getting two turn horses. And I thought this is what the public wanted, right? There's always the clamoring that, oh, you know, Americans just breed for, you know, speed. Doesn't seem like we're doing that anymore.
No, and that's been a great point that you've been making on that. One thing I just had it in my head wrong. You know, mind your biscuits, went to Japan. All right, we'll see you. And then now he's emerged. And I had to go back through his lifetime past performances to really appreciate what Chad did with this horse, Chad Summers. You know, with the Lucas Classic and just missing in the Met Mile. And I mean, to see, he was just not the Golden Shaheen 6-furlong, you know, sprinter.
Well, you listen, he got beat the dirtiest nose in the Met, right? I mean, he showed capability of being more than just a three-quarter horse, without fail, without a doubt.
Yeah, and I just always think of him as the, you know, horse went to Dubai, won twice. I think he won to Malibu also. But he actually, Chad did a masterful job in stretching that out, and the horse, he was big, had a lot of size to him, and now here he is with the horse in the Derby. And not a total surprise when you go back and look at what he did, and then also the dam side and all those ingredients that Sid can talk about.
Yeah, in fact, maybe we'll do that when he joins us here in the next half hour or so. You know, should also note that even Continuar's sire, Drafon, who was thought of,
yes,
you know, who made his bones as a sprinter for the Bioma, for, you know, for the Chews.
And then they, over the years, bought many American sprinters. They bought N Sweep, they bought Drafon, they bought Mind Your Biscuits, who obviously more than a sprinter, but then breed them to all sorts of female families with lots and lots of stamina,
yeah,
influences.
Yeah, exactly. That's the sun. Sid talked about that last week with the Sunday Silence. What that does, and you know how, you know, the decades of, you know, of careful consideration by Shade, you know, the Yoshidas, and everybody that's been involved. The overnight success that was 40 years in the making.
Yes.
How did they get so good? Well, they've been working at it for half a century. So it's not like it's not like they started in 2000. Well, Dick, let's get to HK, and I know I had to get Tim Peef in when I did, because he was going to be tied up from 9:30 on, so that's why I wasn't able to get to you for that usual advance. We got beat in the third leg of that pick three last week. That was unfortunate.
Yeah. It happens. But Saturday night, Sunday morning, three Group 1 major, major stake races at Sha Tin. Chairman Sprint Prize going 6 furlongs, the Champion's Mile, and then the QE2 Cup going 1.25 miles. Hong Kong has 4 of the top turf horses in the world. So regardless of anyone shipping in, they're already superstar horses that just win and win and win, and by any rankings that you see of international horses, Lucky Swainess, California Spaniel, Golden 60, Romantic Warrior are all top 5, top 8. I mean, they're just spectacular. They're all in Saturday night, Sunday morning, and let me do it in a distance order. The sprint, Lucky Swainess is a 4-year-old. Now, he did not contest any of the 4-year-old series races. What he's been doing is winning Group 1 stake races, going short. He's just emerged as this sensational sprinter. He's gone 7 furlongs and 107 and change twice. He beat California Spangle going, going 6 furlongs. Beat California Spangle going 7 furlongs at 121.12. With the final quarter of 21.74. I mean, he's just awesome, and is just on a roll that he's pushed aside Wellington, who was the champion sprinter in Hong Kong. And Wellington won the last 2 runnings of the Chairman Sprint Prize. And yet, Lucky Swainess handled them with these. Early in the season, yes, Wellington did beat him, but that was a race where Zach Purton had all sorts of traffic problems aboard Lucky Swainess. So the point is, Lucky Swainess lays over the field in the Chairman Sprint Prize. Wellington will obviously make him run because he's just a game, terrific 6-year-old. The rest are mostly Hong Kong domestic horses, with the exception of Aguri. Christian DeMauro is going to ride this one more, I don't know, maybe more middle distance than six furlong distance. Hard to throw out the Japanese, but he doesn't really have the group status that many of the others have. But he's young and he's getting better, and, you know, he might be an emergent sprinter. But right now, Lucky Swinus is just as good as it gets. So he kind of lays over the Chairman Sprint Prize, which will be, I'm not sure the race order. They'll draw the races tomorrow. But that'll be the six furlong Group 1 race. The Maya race, now with four great horses and only three races, something had to give, and it was the Maya, where Golden 60, last two Horse of the Year titles in Hong Kong, is going to face California Spangle. Now, they have raced before. California Spangle, in fact, beat him in December in the Longines race. And then since then, Golden 60 looked like maybe he's not the horse he used to be. Well, then he comes back and wins the Stewards' Cup and the Hong Kong Gold Cup rather handily, beating Romantic Warrior and California Spangle, going a mile, and then last time out in the Gold Cup, beat Romantic Warrior going a mile and a quarter. Now he's back to a mile. He just has gotten to the point at his age, Steve, that Vincent O just has to get him out, get him settled, and then he has a burst that's it's pretty unbeatable. So unless California Spangle can open up a distance of ground where he just can't close fast enough, you know, in other words, even though he can run 22 seconds last quarter in a mile race, if California Spangle has three lengths on him, maybe he has enough to hold on. Now, last time out, California Spangle won the Chairman's Trophy, Group 2, going a mile, and it was an interesting race because Zach actually broke on top, as he always does, and then took back and let another horse take the lead. And then turning for home, he had to go up after the leader. He had to hold off Money Catcher. He did it rather handily. The track was a little slowish that day, and it kind of gave him a new dimension. So, yes, he'll be on the lead if Zach wants to lead, but he doesn't have to be on the lead. So if someone else takes the lead, maybe Zach's just going to sit and wait and be, you know, first run. And if the first run can be quick enough and open up some distance between him and Golden 60, maybe that'll be enough. My Oberon is in from Australia for Animation. Joe Marrera is going to ride him. My Sauce has some backlash, you know, certainly not a impossible type horse, but that's about the only Aegean is in from New Zealand. So didn't really get the international participation, but I think that's due to Golden 60 and California Spangle's presence. And I'm picking a minor upset here. I'm picking California Spangle. I think he's showing new dimensions. I think he uses his speed to advantage out of the gate and then make that first run, see if it's enough to hold off Golden 60. The mile and a quarter race is the more fascinating of the three races because it drew the strongest international contingent. Romantic Warrior won this race last year. He won the Longines Hong Kong Cup in December. He's just been spectacular. As he's gone through all the class rises, he started out, at class four and just worked his way up to being a multiple Group 1 stakes winner. But he's really in tough here. He has Dubaiana from Will Haggis, and they went to Australia on April 8th. They won the Queen Elizabeth Stakes down there rather handily. Now they're back to Hong Kong on their way back to England, and Haggis has shipped all over the world and done extremely well. Tom Marquand is the regular rider when they do ship. He'll be tough. Japan also sends out Hishu Iguazu. Joe Marrera is going to ride. Lots of backlash. Ran in the Longines Cup in December 2 years ago behind Love's Only You and was beating a short head. Dan and the Kid we've seen in Hong Kong before. He's back after running second in Hong Kong back in December behind Romantic Warrior, but that was more of a distance second. Prognosis, who is a son of Deep Impact, Zach Purton's going to ride. Doesn't have the back class, but seems to be an emergent type horse. And the horse I'm looking to pull off the upset here, Steve, Geraldina, 5-year-old mare by Maurice at a Gentle Donna. Gentle Donna won 7 Group 1s in Japan, all-time great. And she has a foal here by Maurice, who's one-dimensional closer, big leg kick. And Maurice has won this race himself. So Maurice was a horse who used to come in from Japan and really, really do damage in Hong Kong. I think he won 3 Group 1s in Hong Kong. Now he's back as the sire of Geraldina. So she's in against boys, gets a 4-pound weight shift, Christian DeMauro. Was a really good third to Equinox the end of last year in the Arima Kinnan. And that's a gigantic race in Japan, all ages, ends this season on a high note. Third to Equinox is a big, big effort. Has a nice, easy prep coming into this on February 2nd. I think she's sitting on a big race, and I think she's going to get the setup because I think there's enough talent in there that when DeMauro unleashes that late kick, I think she'll be able to get up in time. So I'm thinking local team will dominate the first two, Lucky Suenas, California Spangle over Golden 60 in the mile, and then in the QE2, we're going to go with Geraldina from Japan.
Excellent. Timing-wise, we start about 12:45.
Eastern time. And the good thing is if you get up early, you can catch one or two of them, now that we've pushed the clocks ahead. So with me, I'm up with the sun. If the sun comes up at 4, I wake up at 4. So not saying I'm going to stay awake, but for these, I'll stay awake.
Yeah.
And you can go, so you can advance bet them, number one. Number two, you can go to HKJC and look for current odds Saturday. And anytime Saturday, you can get the actual current odds for all the races, all the horses, all the pools. So if you want to get a head start, see where the money's going. It also gives you a good flavor of how heavy Lucky Swainess is going to be as a favorite, things like that. You know, you just make some decisions based on that. So all that is available just like it is every race day in Hong Kong.
Excellent. All right. Have you got a push here for the late action?
Yes. Race 7, the heavy favorite one, so we didn't miss out on anything with that Song Pak Fu. Race 8, wide open race. So I narrowed it down to 2. Number 7, Seasons With. Jamie Richards has just been on this tear since he came in from New Zealand. Horses got acclimated. Now he's winning in bunches. Has to overcome post 10 to get Zach Purton. And number 5, Zach Purton had been riding Lightning Storm for Danny Shum in really good form. Nothing not to like. It picks up Lyle Hewitson. So those two, I think, are sneaky good. Lightning Storm was the longer odds when I checked a little while ago. So 5 and 7 in the 8th race. And then in the 9th race, it was the heavy favorite is number 7, How Deep Is Your Love? And he ran into, in fact, this was 2 weeks ago, Steve. Victor, the winner, was winning his third straight race. They moved his handicap up 11 pounds off that win. And yet, How Deep Is Your Love was only a half length behind. So he looks like a 3-year-old that's just keep coming and coming. He looks awfully tough in that race. So I'm just going to single him. So if you can find a double, not all the simulcast outlets are taking a double, 7, 5 with 7. If you want a price in race 8, go with the 5.
Very good. All right. Let me see. What do we got for timing?
There.
It's
15 minutes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will keep an eye on it, but we cannot
Right. You're a busy man. Now, next Wednesday, I'm traveling, so okay. I can't be on, but I will be there in person either Thursday or Friday, probably Thursday.
Excellent. All right. Then we will look forward to a Thursday visit.
A wrap-up of the three races and a preview of Oaks and Derby.
Outstanding.
Right. Sounds good.
Dick, I appreciate it, and I will see you next week.
Okay, definitely.
Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC Racing on Twitter, and HKJC, everything you possibly need, when the form guide and so much more. You know what? We're actually right at 10. Casey, no music. Let's take a clean break and come back. Jessica Martini is going to join us in Ocala. We'll get the day one report from OBS. Three more days of horse sale. They're about a half an hour from starting. Then Sid, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and plenty more. Seth Merrow and KK is going to stop by again, and we will keep going. Live at Churchill, starting to get serious. We've also got some follow-up. We should do some follow-up to the Hall of Fame announcement from yesterday. I think everybody happy for those that were announced, but also plenty of consternation and cat kicking, particularly over Kona Gold. It just, as Jay Pridman rightly says, it's just inexplicable and indefensible. Bizarre. All right, back after this hour two at the races. Jess Martini. It's always the right time for a martini when it's Jessica Martini.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place.